Happy Bitcoin Friday, freaks. It's your host, Odell, here for another Sale Dispatch, the show focused on actionable Bitcoin and freedom tech discussion. I'm broadcasting here live from the Bitcoin TV studio at Bitcoin Park with my good friend, CK. Before we get started, I want to thank all the freaks who continue to support the show with Bitcoin donations. Dispatch is unique in that we do not have ads or sponsors. It is purely funded by donations from our audience, so thank you to everyone who continues to contribute to the show. The easiest way to support the show is by going to citadeldispatch.com/donate. You can send either Bitcoin on-chain or Bitcoin via Lightning. You can include a message. You can try and rise up on the leaderboard that's shown there, or you can donate anonymously. You can also donate via my BIP47 paynim. Easy to remember, it is Odell. That is compatible with Samurai Wallet, Sparrow Wallet, and now Stack Wallet, latest wallet to add BIP47 payment code support. And I believe Blue Wallet is about to merge it as well, which is pretty cool to see. You can also support the show using various podcasting 2.0 apps, such as Breeze Wallet, Podverse.fm, and Fountain Podcasts. With those apps, you simply search Sale Dispatch, press that subscribe button, load it up with Bitcoin, choose how much Bitcoin per minute you think the show is worth, and those sats get streamed directly to my node. Extremely empowering seeing all your sats come in live to my node. You can also donate through Podcasting 2.0 something called Boostograms. Boostograms are where you attach a message to a amount of sats. As is tradition, I read the top four Boostograms from the last episode. We have at S-V-E-I-N-O-L, Svinol, with 55,555 sats, saying, "Mandibles, stay humble and stack sats. Great advice." You have at McCoy with 10,000 sats, another stellar rip Odell, threads the needle, allowing the discussion to flow between the guests, interjecting succinct takes, keeping everyone honest. We have Ride or Die Freak 8 Mithrandur with 7,777 sats, saying, "Block Wars, a great book, an important account of history for all future Citadel libraries. Had the pleasure of having BitMEX research on the last episode. If you freaks haven't picked up Block Wars, the Block Size War, I think it was what it's called, you should pick it up. It's a great book about the 2017 Block Size War. If you weren't around, it is an absolute must read. And then we have at Slim Shady with 101 sats, and he just said P, which is great advice. And I appreciate all the freaks who continue to support the show. Also, I know it's a bear market. I know it's a recession. Might turn into a global economic depression as well. So if you don't have sats to spare, you can always support the show by subscribing on your favorite platform. It's available on all podcasting apps. Leaving a review helps. Sharing with friends and family helps. It's also available on Rumble, Twitch, YouTube, Bitcoin TV, and Twitter. Sharing it, subscribing, leaving reviews, all that helps. And then one last shout out. Dispatch is very unique in that we have a live interactive chat where audience members join the conversation. Our chat is streamed from Twitch, YouTube, Twitter. We have our Matrix chat, which you can find at citadeldispatch.com/chat, which is 24/7, 365 on that end. And you guys are part of the conversation. You're part of the conversation. You're one of the hosts of the show. You keep us honest. And it's really great to have that audience participation. So thank you to everyone who continues to join the live chat. You guys make it special. So thank you. With all that said, I have good friend in the studio, CK Snarks, Christian. How's it going, Christian?
It's going good.
I never call you Christian. How's it going, CK?
CK is better.
You just got back from a long trip. It's good to have you back in Nashville.
It's good to be back in Nashville, man. Going on vacation is always fun, but you know, you always kind of miss your bed a little bit. You miss home. So it's good to be back. Feels good. And you know, Bitcoin Magazine, we're grinding towards Bitcoin 2023, 55 days away. So
55 days.
Yeah, man. There's no shortage of work to do on that front.
Meanwhile, we got Balaji calling for $1 million Bitcoin in 83 days now, I believe.
I know. If he's right, you know, it's going to be a hell of a an event.
Might have a humble 200K by conference day based on his projections, not by mine. I don't really know. I don't make projections anymore.
Bitcoin tends to surprise you.
I just stay humble and stack sad.
Those are the good times.
You know, I looked up the other day. I think I've said good morning, stay humble, stack sats on Twitter. Manually typed out.
You know.
178 days, I think it's been in a row. Something like that. Crazy streak.
You pick up any other good habits?
When I started that, FTX was still alive. BlockFi was still alive. Barry Silbert didn't owe billions of dollars to people. A lot of shit has gone down. You know, banks didn't fail yet. We didn't have bank runs yet. Dude, Credit Suisse was still an independent company. A lot of things have happened.
Bitcoin happens fast. It happens fast, man.
So what are we going to talk about today? I titled the episode Hyper Bitcoinization, Strong Communities, and Sovereign Individuals. I know you love the sovereign individual thesis.
Yep.
And the freaks know I love just shilling books left and right. If they haven't read The Sovereign Individual, they should read that. And also, if they haven't, I've recently... not that recently, maybe like a year ago, read When Money Dies, which is like, it's a very dense book, but it's a good one. It recounts the Weimar, the Germany hyperinflation crisis.
I bought that one twice and have not read it yet. So
it's really dense. Like, I'm not going to pretend I finished it. The way I look at it is like Mandibles is the easier read version.
Dude, so Mandibles first, then Sovereign Individual, and then if you really just like have a hankering for punishment, I guess When Money Dies.
So where do you want to start, CK?
I mean, my shtick is, I think stay humble, stack sats is the perfect advice. So kudos to you for putting the perfect advice into a slogan, popularizing it. Generally speaking, when Bitcoiners say things like you can never have enough Bitcoin, or they do like financially irresponsible things, it makes me think that they're like, one, not humble enough, and two, not bullish enough. So it kind of grinds my gears. So, I mean, I'd love to have a conversation with you and tease that out. But I mean, if you really understand what hyper Bitcoinization looks like in like practicality in terms of Bitcoin, I just think that people are really miscalibrated for what that world will look like in Bitcoin terms, and it's causing them to behave irrationally in hindsight.
I mean, CK, I am humbly all in on Bitcoin, and I humbly believe that I do not have enough Bitcoin. So how am I acting irrational? Why don't you hit me with some hard talk here?
Okay, well, how much Bitcoin do you need to be satisfied when Bitcoin hits hyper-Bitcoinization?
I don't think that number does not exist.
Okay, break that down to me, because I mean, there's plenty of like targets that you could put that, you know, might sound logical. Like, when you think of wealth, my problem is like, when you think of wealth as a person, like how do you think about that? And the reality is like, there's a number where your life is amazing, right? Where like your physical wants are taken care of. You have, you know, vast amounts of security and opportunity that you can create for yourself. So like that number exists, and then put that number.
And that number is different for every person.
Sure, right? It's different for everybody. Like, to make good economic calculations today for the future, like you got to at least know that number, right? And from there, like, you need to put it in Bitcoin terms and then project that through some level of adoption curve that you're expecting.
Do you conceptualize that in fiat terms currently, or?
Well, you know me, I like to say 37 sats equals generational wealth. So
I think you should have substantially more than 37 sats. Like, I think that's a way low ball.
No, I mean, like, you have a massive opportunity.
Like, currently you can get, right now you can get 3581 sats, 3,581 sats for a dollar.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
I mean, hey, you have a massive opportunity to stack a disgusting amount of sats in a hyper Bitcoinized world today.
We have narwhal tacos here. Matt wants enough Bitcoin to buy the Bitcoin skull for Bitcoin Park. I mean, I think that would be a nice starting point. Yeah.
I mean, you might have enough. It sounds like he didn't even get commissioned the value of one Bitcoin to do the whole thing.
No, look, I mean, I respect that. Look, there are things. The way I look at Bitcoin is like the base unit of my time. The only thing that is more scarce than Bitcoin is my time, right? So if I put time into something, I want to store that in Bitcoin. And if I'm talking about something, if I'm thinking about doing something that requires money, something like Bitcoin Park, I'm making a calculation on whether or not those sats are worth the endeavor. So, you know, people always ask Bitcoin Park, like, oh, I would love to have Bitcoin Park in my hometown or in wherever I live. And we love that. Like, I want, you know, Bitcoin is distributed. The cool part is this grassroots Bitcoin movement that is not controlled by anybody. I'm happy to get on a call with anybody to help them, you know, set up their own local community and build out their own local community. We have grassroots Bitcoin here every September. That is, you know, free tickets for anyone who, it's invite only for local Bitcoin meetup organizers for that purpose. But when they ask what the secret is, what is the secret to Bitcoin Park? The secret to Bitcoin Park is that Rod and I believe in it to a point where we're willing to risk a bunch of Bitcoin in the front end bootstrapping this thing. Like it's losing us sats. We're losing sats every day that Bitcoin Park exists right now, trying to make it sustainable because we think it's a worthy mission, right? It's a worthy concept, right? And so when I think about it, I want as much Bitcoin as possible while still being fulfilled currently. And it's there's more correlation there with, you know, like radical saving ideology or something, right? Like reduce expenses, focus on priorities, and try and make the most. And also, I mean, I would like to retire early, right?
Me too.
So I don't know. So to me, it's just, I don't know what that number is. I have yet to figure out what that number is. You know, how many sats is, how many, I guess that's the question. It's like, how many sats is enough to retire?
Again, I think everyone has their own personal number, right? But if you don't have a number, like how can you, I guess, like how can you calibrate to your sat opportunity cost appropriately?
I like that, sat opportunity cost.
So I mean, like Bitcoiners love giving investment advice, man. Like don't invest in shit coins. Don't speculate on NFTs. All these things. That's all investment advice. Stack sats. Don't buy a house. Like Bitcoiners love fucking investment advice. I personally think that there are some issues with, some of, you know, the dogmatic investment advice out there. You know, there's a lot of great stuff like stay humble, stack sats, dollar cost averaging, owning property. Like there's some fantastic investment advice out there.
I think investment real estate is a shitcoin. But for owning, and I say that as someone who's launching Bitcoin Park, but, I think owning your own property, right. Or as close to owning your own property as possible in the world of property taxes, is a worthy use of sats. But I think I'm pretty consistent at least. And I know this is not a, you're not talking necessarily about me.
You're not the worst perpetrator. That's for sure.
But I'm a strong believer that everyone has the right to get wrecked. Like they can invest in whatever they want. I'm a strong believer that shitcoins and everything else are trending to zero in Bitcoin terms. I think the last few weeks have brought a lot of people onto that side. But if you want to, like, by all means, you're your own person. I believe in personal responsibility. Like, if you want to lose your money, like, that's your prerogative.
So, I don't have anything, like, I'm not arguing against that. I'm not arguing against any of the things that you said earlier. I think people should stack as much sats as they can. What exactly. I'm challenging them to do is to think through what is the actual value of those sats in a hyper Bitcoinized world. So that way you can calibrate your decision making for today more accurately. And personally, like while stacking sats is a very big part of like what the future is going to look like and having as much Bitcoin as possible, there's a lot of other elements there. you need to get there with your sats. Like, right. I have another saying, like, you know, the world where like Bitcoin was less than a cent and like there's people who were like, they just didn't know the value of it. And right. they were like, had way more sats back then than now. Like, no matter how hard they tried, they've reached their all time high sat count, period. And like, there's a whole
many
generation of
cases.
Bitcoin. We're still in that paradigm, Matt.
Yeah.
We're still in that paradigm. So like, if you don't understand that we're like, there's this S curve of adoption idea, like any amount of sats on the bottom of the S will be stupid at the top of the S.
He's showing me the S live. I'm looking
yeah.
at the S.
I'm like making a hand gesture, but you can envision it, right? Any amount at the bottom will be stupid at the
But that's
top.
Why
that's why 37 sats equals generational wealth. Cause I'm trying to help people understand that like the arc of Bitcoin, it's like, stop thinking about in dollar terms. You're the ones who are thinking about in dollar terms by saying like, I can't have enough. You can and will have enough. You already do have enough.
I'm thinking
like, you got to get them across the finish line.
I'm thinking, first of all, I do not have enough, CK. I'm thinking in
what practical terms?
I'm thinking in cattle purchasing power, in acre purchasing power, in water purchasing power. Like I have, you know.
In today's world,
like
though?
Water,
with what assumptions?
Water, what you know. Water will be priced in sats at some point. People have to live. They need water, right? Like there will be a water crisis in our future.
Probably.
I don't want my grandkids to have to worry about, you know, using the shitty public water pump, right? Like I want them to have nice quality water, and be able to focus on their priorities. I mean, when I think about it, it's like,
you sound like a doomer.
I'm an optimist.
Okay.
I'm a doomer optimist is what I say.
I think the transitions will have hard times. So I agree with you there.
My theory is the path to hyper Bitcoinization is billions of people getting rugged over and over and over again until the Bitcoin standard happens. It's basically a path of pain while people touch the stove or their friends touch their stove or their family touches the stove and they get burned and they seek out better options and they find free and open source tools, including Bitcoin, as a way out, as a lifeboat. That is basically my doomer optimism theory.
I agree 100%. Again, what I'm trying to say is like, ultimate, like that's a very small marginal part of Bitcoin's history, right? Like we're at the beginning, there's the transition, and then there's like the Bitcoin world. So I'm just trying to get people to think through like what the world might look like after like we're at 0.001% adoption, right? Something
right.
along those lines. Like I define adoption
40 million people or something.
Sure. You know, and that's probably over optimistic because they're counting like herd of crypto and have an account at an exchange.
Well, no. Like Michael Saylor's of the world would say like 150 million, 200
sure.
million. Like
yeah.
I try and be more conservative with it.
Yeah. I mean, if you have any sort of conservative filtering, we're, you know, 8 billion people, right?
Right.
So we're not even close to 1%. Like, so we're way earlier than I think a lot of Bitcoiners are making credit for, which means that like this hockey stick up is going to be way more violent than we think. And like whatever the price action is right now is it's nothing that's it, like the volatility is nothing compared to like, you know, getting to 4 billion people using Bitcoin. Like we haven't even come to realize what any real meaningful adoption looks like yet. All of this price action is like a blip, very, very, very small blip.
No, I mean, I agree. I think people will look back, right? And, you know, the idea that you're worried about buying Bitcoin at 21,000 versus 28,000 is going to be the same as is going to be so trivial. It'll be the same idea as worrying about buying at 2100 or 2800 or worrying about buying at 210 or 280 or
yep.
$21 and $28, right? Like, as time goes on, you start to realize those past short-term volatility price swings or whatever are completely irrelevant. But that's where my feeling that I you can't have enough Bitcoin comes from, because I have spent so much time in the space, and it's funny because, you know, everyone thinks they're late when they come into Bitcoin, right? I thought I was late when I came into Bitcoin. I've been in Bitcoin space for 10 years now, right? I was extremely late when I came into Bitcoin. There was plenty of people that came in earlier than me. There's that famous Bitcoin talk post where like, I missed the bus, you know, like I should have bought at 11 cents or whatever. Now it's like 30 cents or whatever.
I missed the bus. I should have bought at a million.
But my point is,
I should have bought at 100 million.
My point is, if I could have told younger Matt, if I could have told younger Odell, you know, in 2015, 2016, like, don't pull your foot off the gas. Just do everything possible to enjoy your life. Like, don't, you know, degrade your current life, because you can die tomorrow. Like, you can just get hit by a fucking car, you know, a meteor can hit or whatever the fuck, you know, trip and hit your head. So enjoy your current life, but also at the same time, like, don't pull your fucking foot off the gas. Like, you just got to keep trying to stack as many sats as possible humbly.
That's the key. But, like, I think a lot of people listen to the stack sats part and they don't necessarily listen to the humble part.
The humble part is the hard part.
Look,
it's the game of survival.
Exactly. The getting any amount of sats from the bottom of the S to the top of the S. Like, I'm trying to, like, frame it. Like, any amount of sats that you can arbitrage between now and hyper Bitcoinization is going to be stupid in a hyper Bitcoinized world. Like, more money than you can imagine. Cause, like, that's how, like, you got to bake in progress. You got to bake in progress on a better system. Like, it's not even just progress on our current trajectory. Like, we are in the monetary dark ages listening to the high priest of motherfucking fiat. Like, how many of those people knew what the world would look like with electricity if we're talking about the real dark ages, right? Like, we're living in an ancient world. Like, literally, in the, like, compared to future hyper Bitcoin as world, we are living in the ancient times, the olden days,
right?
And that shit's gonna happen fast. Like, I think I really do agree with Blodgy. Like, when currencies devalue, it, like, you know, it starts on a curve and then it's over. Like, it just happens fast. So, you know, I'm not saying it's going to happen 2030, 2050, whatever. I think it's going to happen in our lifetime. So we need to make strategic decisions to literally get our bodies and our sats that we have today to the future world. Yeah. Like, it's okay. Like, hey, you could have told Matt in 2015, like, don't take your foot off the gas. But what does that look like? And, like, how does Matt optimize for survivability and getting any, like, pre-hyper Bitcoinized sats to hyper Bitcoinized future world? Like, that's like framing that I want to talk about, because it's a whole nother level of, like, thinking about survivability. And ultimately, like, of getting to being super fucking rich, that you have lots and lots of optionality in a hyper Bitcoinized world. If you have multiple Bitcoins, congratulations, you've more than succeeded in getting enough sats for that accomplishment.
Bitcoin is Bitcoin.
Whatever. You have multiple 100 million Satoshi chunks.
There you go.
You've more than succeeded on that part. Like, don't be one of those losers in 2013 who topped out in sat count. Because you might be in the hyper Bitcoinized world with fewer sats, significantly fewer sats, because you didn't think of what that scale of change is going to look like. Any of that make sense? Was that just a stupid ramble?
No. I mean, I think that I agree with you. First of all, I like how Parker frames it, gradually then suddenly. And I do feel like we're either at the tail end of the gradually phase or the beginning of the suddenly, and it doesn't really matter. But this feels like the moment. It feels like Bitcoin's moment with the financial economic chaos that's going on. People are starting to really wake up. I think on a risk adjusted basis, Bitcoin has never been more intriguing as a potential asset to hold or also to use, right? I mean, holding is using, but to spend and to be able to spend without permission, you know, have no permission required.
Why is Nosfer so huge? Because the feeling of, like, using your Bitcoins for micropayments, I really do think that that's one of the biggest reasons.
But I think, like, if you look back, so you use the dark ages as a metaphor, right?
Sure.
But if you go even closer than that, you go to the gold rush in the early 1900s, late 1800s, going out west, you know, settling the Western United States, accumulating land, accumulating gold. None of those people were bullish enough. Right. Maybe some of them were, but most of them weren't. Right. And so when I look at it, I kind of look at it. OK. We are in this unique position where we have a realization. We understand this. Right. And if you look at most people that have become successful, they have a focus and they basically have one big bet that they make the lion's share of their success off of. It's not people diversifying. Diversification is a way to reduce the erosion of your wealth. It's not a way to build wealth or build success. And this is our moment. Like, we were born in this weird, I mean, everyone was born at different times, but me and you were born at this weird time where it was like the inflection point between the analog and the digital world, where we didn't grow up with cell phones and we didn't grow up with social media. We didn't grow up with all this stuff, but we saw it all kind of happen. And we also ended up in a situation where Bitcoin was being nurtured and was coming of age, right? Was happening. And to me, this is our moment. And don't squander that moment, right? And I'm not saying make a leveraged bet, right? I'm not saying ape in, you want to survive, hence the stay humble part. But ultimately, like, the goal has to be to stack as many sats as possible. Like, there is no any time spent on obtaining sats today is worth 100x the time spent in maybe 10 years even, right? Or, like, who knows the time scale, right?
But probably, like, way better. Well, probably way better.
But, like, if I spend an hour today trying to obtain sats, I'm getting, like, 10x on 4 years from now or something like that, right? So if you're talking as sats as a unit of time, if you're talking about sats priced in time, then there is literally no better time than to try and obtain as many as possible.
So I like, the thing is like, I'm not disagreeing with that at all.
37 sats is so low. It's like too low. I don't think 37 sats is generational wealth. Do you really believe that? Or is it just I know every good meme is based in reality.
My whole thing is that, let me explain 37 sats. 37 sats is the block reward in 95 years.
Right.
So the only thing
I
know...
the
block subsidy.
Because transaction fees will probably be significantly more than 37
sats. Yeah, I mean, I agree with that too. I'm just talking about the block subsidy. All I know is that if Bitcoin works, then more hashes than any single person on this planet can even begin to fathom will be directed every 10 minutes at acquiring that block.
Right.
So it's either 37 sats is worth more than all of the hashes that are being directed at the network today by orders and orders and orders of
plus
magnitude.
Plus transaction fees.
Plus transaction fees. Or it's not. So I'm just trying to, like, grok that, right? So the only thing that I can say is that, like, the whole network focused on one block every single time, like, that's an enormous fucking amount of, if we're in hyper-Bitcoinization, what all of the energy on the planet is going to be doing. And trying to, like, relate that to whatever we think today, you have to have your mind blown.
No, I agree. We can't. No one can comprehend.
So, like, it's
the implications.
Like, what does 37 sats equals generational wealth? I'm literally trying to, like, irk people from thinking about Bitcoin to a million. Like,
right.
Think about, oh, Bitcoin's going to be worth 10x more in, like, my time will be worth 10x more now acquiring Bitcoin than in 10 years. Like, no, bro. It's like, Bitcoin's going to happen really fucking fast, and it's like the move from the bottom of the S to the top of the S is going to be thousands on thousands on thousands on thousands of multiples. So yes, obviously you should spend as much time acquiring and getting Bitcoin from the bottom of the S to the top of the S, but you need to get to the top of the S too.
Right.
Right. Like, the Bitcoin part, check the box. You're good. Like, not saying you should not continue to acquire sats, but, like, you also need to put some focus on survivability. You need to put some focus on making sure the sats are survivable.
That's the stay humble.
You need part. Like, that's why this is a stay humble podcast, because the stay humble part of stay humble stack sats is, like, drastically underrated.
CK wanted
drastically underrated.
CK wanted to name this podcast Stay Humble, but I didn't think anyone would listen to it if it was just Stay Humble. It's not as sexy as the title I chose.
Which shows the problem here. Like, the Stay Humble part is actually the way better part of the advice, even though the stacking stats part is also extremely important.
The Stay Humble part's the hard part. We have, by the way, the reason...
And the more important part.
The reason why I laughed was because Nope Not Today on YouTube said lots of sexual tension in this rip, which is why I laughed. But he also said he had a really good comment. I'm curious what your response is here.
Yeah.
He said, it's better to have stacked and lost than to never have stacked at all.
Sure. My goal is to stack as much as possible and stay solvent as to never lose.
Yeah, stay humble, stack sets.
So like, again, like it's... Like, maybe it's better to stack and to have lost, but personally, like, again, I'm not saying to not stack as much as you can. I'm saying that, like, you need to weigh your priorities to survivability of that stack. Like, bring that all-time high sat count across the finish line. Don't have a bunch of fucking losses.
Don't get discouraged if you know, you don't have your all-time. Like, a lot of Bitcoiners, like, live in the shadow of their all-time high sat amount. I mean, that...
Sure.
I mean, I didn't learn. I don't pretend that I'm the most humble person in the world. One of the reasons I say it so much is to remind myself to stay humble. But like, it didn't just come to me one day. Like, I got wrecked multiple times before I realized that the name of the game is survival. You need to actually survive. And there's a lot of confirmation bias out there. If you look on Twitter or whatnot, oh, this guy's an amazing trader. Oh, this guy's like, he's done so well. It's like, you only see the survivors. All the people that we've lost along the way, they're just not there anymore, right? You just don't even see them.
Totally. Look, my goal is the same as yours, to help give people the best chance of having the most sats at the finish line.
Right.
Like, I'm just saying that there's more to this formula than the stacking sats part. A lot of it has to do with the staying humble and survivability part. And I'm just trying to say that if you think through from first principles what the world moving on to Bitcoin looks like, infinity divided by 21 million, if you will.
Good meme.
Like,
sounds like in what world
is your current sat count right now, probably like for the people listening to this show, not good enough in that world for you to be more than for you and your and generations of your lineage to be more than content.
Yeah, I mean, I would think that most of the audience of Dispatch is probably at a point where they will be, you know, doing better than the majority of the world in a hyper Bitcoin situation.
All worlds,
I just don't know.
Technological progress has always made more wealth for the lowest common denominator. So, like, for example, like, right now, we probably live better than the richest people in ancient Egypt by orders of magnitude.
Right.
Right? So, if you project that forward, and again, like, the whole point about Bitcoin is, like, the fiat system is inefficient bullshit. We don't have energy where we need it. The monetary system is... It inhibits us from allocating wealth accurately. So theoretically, if Bitcoin is right and it's the thing that is going to upgrade humanity, like infinity gets bigger, right?
Right.
So it's infinity divided by 21 million.
Yeah, that's what the Bitcoin deniers don't understand that part. The people that say like you can't have a deflationary currency.
Well, sure, but the Bitcoiners should think this, right?
Right.
Like, so infinity is going to get bigger. So, you know, not only are we moving from, you know, an ancient dark monetary world, the dark ages of the monetary revolution, we're going into like the enlightenment of that, right? We're the fix, like Jeff Booth tries to describe this. It's like you can't measure the new system by the old system. Like you have to completely divorce your brain from that. So again, like I want everyone to have maximum sats across the finish line. I'm just trying to ring the bell that like there's more to it. And you talk about this all the time. I just think that like we don't emphasize the survivability element. And look, hey, I'm living a normal life. You know, I live in the U.S. You know, for the most part, I'm pretty average. Like, it's not like I'm going doing extreme things to survive. But, you know, one of the biggest things that you can do is like staying solvent and like being humble with your stacking, for where you're biasing survivability rather than risk taking.
Right.
Personally, like I think that is good advice. And if you think about the actual success story of this thing, like, you made it. Good job. You, like, if you're listening to the show, you made, you, like, you figured out the SAT part.
Hasn't happened.
You got to get it across the finish line.
Hasn't happened yet.
Sure. So stay solvent between now and then. Like, focus on that.
I think you said a word maybe 10 minutes ago, 15 minutes ago, optionality, right?
Yeah.
And the more sats you can stack today, the more optionality you have in the future.
How about stack and keep?
Yeah, stack and keep. I mean, first of all, to be absolutely clear, I think most of the freaks who listen to the show already understand, if you're not holding self-custody, you're not stacking sats, you're stacking IOUs. So I've had people say to me, oh, you should add, hold your own keys at the end of stayable stacks. It's implied. Otherwise, you're not stacking sats, you're stacking IOUs. You're going to get rugged eventually. You want to learn the tools. You want to learn how to use the tools. We might have adversarial environments that get much worse in your different countries. We don't know, you know, we have a global audience here at Dispatch, but in America, we can see it happening in America where there's an adversarial situation, and you're going to need to know how to use the tools before that situation happens. You don't want to learn this stuff as the crises are kind of unfolding and everyone's freaking out and running to the mm-hmm. exits and things are becoming illegal and stuff yep. like that, right?
No, but yeah, I 100% agree. Like the educating to the best practices, like, and most of this talk is towards like hardcore Bitcoiners who've been here for a little bit. Like, I understand, like, people have their goals. You should get to your goals. I think people should think about their goals and like apply that to their you know, their life mission. Like, this is a little bit of like personal finance. But not to redirect the conversation a little bit, but let's like talk through like the hyper Bitcoinization or Bitcoin scenarios in general.
Let's talk through it.
The way I think about Bitcoin playing out is there's three likely scenarios for Bitcoin. Bitcoin works and infinity divided by 21 million. I personally think that's the most likely scenario, but I'm talking my book. I'm very into Bitcoin. I think that, you know, I'm obviously convinced.
You're all in.
Yeah. And I mean, definitely all in with my time. Yeah. So there's no question there.
It's all that matters. Yeah.
Next likely scenario is Bitcoin fails.
Right.
So that, and when I say fail, I mean like irrelevant. Like, for example, like, do you know what the potential operating systems of, you know, the internet or the potential, the potential,
like the competitors,
yeah, competitors to TCP/IP. Do you know right. about any of that stuff? Like, how often do you think about that? How relevant is that to your life?
Right.
So like Bitcoin could fail. It could be like that. Zero. No one gives a shit about it. Maybe there's like some history about it, whatever. Like, that's the next likely scenario. And then the third most likely, but the least likely of these of the scenarios, is Bitcoin is just another asset, right? So that's actually the reality we live in right now.
Like, so you think that's the least likely?
That, yeah, by far, that's the least likely.
Zero or one or...
Yeah, I mean, I think it's far more likely for Bitcoin to fail than for us to be like in this multi-chain, like not even multi-chain, like multi-store of value asset world. Like, right. I think that is like, this is the anomaly right now.
You either think Bitcoin sucks all the air out of the room or it doesn't.
Yeah, or it fails. Exactly. And I mean, no one is really willing to think about like what that actually looks like, or very few people are. But, you know, if I'm going to be planning, the least likely thing I'm planning for is the third scenario. And the next two most likely things that I'm planning for is Bitcoin everything or Bitcoin nothing.
How are you planning for Bitcoin nothing? You're like completely fucked if that happens.
I mean, guns, bullion, survival skills, trying to, you know, understand, get as close as possible to the money printer. I mean, there's a lot of different things that you can do to try to plan for that the Bitcoin zero scenario. I mean, right now, it feels like the Bitcoin success story is escalating.
I'm a big believer in ammo as a...
Yeah,
as
so
good, as it's just a good thing to stack in general.
Sure, you know, I'm just trying to say, like, I'm trying to calibrate towards what the future is actually going to look like. So, in the Bitcoin everything scenario, I just think that any amount at the bottom of the S is stupid at the top of the S, because we can't think exponentially. Because if you think about the thinkers of the past projecting into the future, like, not only were they off, but they are off by insane amounts, like not even close. Like, Nikola Tesla and Ford were like the only people that could think through like what Bitcoin looked like back in the, you know, just 100 years ago. When I say 37 sats equals generational wealth, that's 95 years from now. This 37 sats is the block reward.
Right.
That's about a similar time scale, you know, and we're talking about we're living in a digitally connected internet viral meme world that is exponentially faster than that old world.
We have Ride or Die Freak Finch, who's going to lose a bunch of money because the mempools aren't going to clear again by the end of the year, in the chat saying he thinks scenario three is way more likely than Bitcoin dying. I kind of agree with him. I think, I don't know. I mean, that's the current status quo, right? That's where we currently are at. We're currently at a situation where Bitcoin is one asset out of many assets. I don't think shitcoins, I think shitcoins are going to exist forever. I don't think individual shitcoins will outperform Bitcoin is my thesis. I think they all trend to zero.
Well, shitcoins will exist just like the lottery still exists. Like, there's just...
And the lottery is extremely successful.
There's going to be stupid people
forever, are greedy, right?
But, I mean, at the same time, like, a Bitcoin world has way different incentives. And, like, any group of population at any given time during the arc of modernity can't relate to their previous arc. So it's just really difficult to, like, you know, to put that into context, right? Like, can you relate at all to, like, any arcs in, you know, the early kingdoms of Europe? You know, like, any populations there? Like, if you met that person, a person from that time, you'd be, like, meeting an alien, like a crazy person.
Right.
So... Again, like, I'm just trying to, like, Bitcoiners are sometimes so fiat-minded, you know? Like, they're not thinking exponentially into the future. They're still operating on, like, our current scale of progress, like, what the world looks like today, like, the base assumptions. And I just think that it's irrational to think that way about Bitcoin. Like, that's not Bitcoin's nature. Like, that's not the arc of technology as it takes a grip of the world. Like, what logically happens is exponential growth and a complete redesign of everything.
Right.
Like, being more bullish is logical in this sense. Like thinking in stupid hyperbole numbers around Bitcoin is the logical first principled way of trying to articulate its arc. Like, we're all way too stupid to be bullish enough if it's actually true, if it actually works out.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm a very simple person. I think Bitcoin accrues value over time with adoption. And I think adoption will increase with need. And I think the need is apparent and will become more obvious to people over time. So you go down that route and it's like, okay, I don't have enough sats. The way I look at it is, so you said, the way I look at it with my family at least is, and the freaks are probably intimately aware of this already, but I expect in 20 years, I'll be living in a cabin in the woods. Now, if Bitcoin's as successful as I expect it to be, I will own the land. And if Bitcoin doesn't, I'll be like squatting on federal land or some shit like that. But no matter what, like, that is going to probably be a similar end game. And the difference there is essentially optionality. And I don't know where else I would store my time. I just don't have any other real options. There's no other good options for me to store my time. I mean, you look at store values, gold doesn't work. It's really hard to take custody. It's really hard to verify. It's really hard to do any kind of transfers. You want to transfer $4 million in gold, you need to hire armored trucks and whatnot. It's fucking insane. You're going to put it on planes. Real estate, you know, number one real estate market in the world was Hong Kong. Overnight, jurisdictional reasons, you know, worthless, right? One of the largest real estate markets in the world was New York, right? And they decided to close all the restaurants and basically socialize all the apartments, right? So real estate's not really a good store of value at all, investment real estate. And then so like you look at all your options, you know, the stock market is completely fucking rigged. and you're kind of left with Bitcoin as this only as the only real option where you have property rights, you know, governed by math and protected.
That's why I think it's very theory. That's why I think it's very unlikely that it's just another asset.
Yeah, but I mean, I would say that's why it's unlikely that it goes to zero or disappears or fails.
Well, it fails or goes to zero, like if the game theory is broken, or if there is something that makes it irrelevant.
Right.
So, if something makes it irrelevant, like ultimately that'd be good for mankind. Like, I don't think that's likely. And if the game theory is broken, like, you know, a lot of Bitcoiners are like harping about like what's wrong with the game theory. So like that, the jury's still out there.
Right.
But I personally think the game theory is incredibly attuned and it's actually dynamic. It's not, it's always upgrading. The game theory of Bitcoin is always upgrading because the world is always changing and our understanding of Bitcoin is always changing.
Yeah, nobody understands Bitcoin. I strongly believe that nobody understands. Like, I don't understand Bitcoin.
Yeah, so I mean, I admit that in my price projections, and I just like, you know, try to correct to the hyperbolic bullish side because I actually think that's logical.
Yeah, so you don't have enough Bitcoin.
And again, like the whole point is like I want to have the max amount of sats on the other side.
Exactly.
But, like, what does? But again, like,
do we disagree on everything? What do we disagree on?
I think we disagree on the narrative and the framing, but...
And what is that?
Well, how to get to the other side with the most amount of sats, I think maybe... I don't even know if we disagree, but like giving that investment advice, right. I think maybe we disagree on.
I'm not giving investment advice. I'm giving life advice.
Same shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, look, it's hard to have a life without good investment.
I'm not the type of person that says all this shit and then it's like not investment advice, you know? I mean, and
look, Bitcoiners love giving investment advice. I'm giving investment advice right now, not investment advice. It's a podcast, but you know, I'm trying to get people to think about Bitcoin a certain way and then actually apply that to how they make decisions in life.
Right.
So like, look, you could think
it's about priorities.
Yeah. And like priorities being attuned to likely scenarios in the future make them strategic, right? They make them powerful. Like if your priorities are misaligned, then like it kind of wrecks you because you're dumping your time into something that doesn't get you where you want to be.
Well, so let's talk about what priorities might supersede stacking sats.
Yeah, so the whole point of the priorities that may supersede stacking sats are things that help you bring the max amount of sats across the finish line. So like, let's just be clear. Like sometimes you have to forego adding a little bit more to your supply, you know, to make a good decision, right? So like maybe getting land at a certain period of time is worth it. Like,
agreed.
Maybe investing in hardware wallets that matter is worth it, right?
Ammo, agreed.
Ammo.
Building strong local communities.
Yeah, all that.
Absolutely integral.
100%. You know, thinking through teaching people how to get the Bitcoin you have and make sure it actually makes it to your family.
Inheritance.
If so, like the inheritance element, if you have a million sats, you know, 1/21th of the entire network, and you die and no one knows how to get it.
Right.
It's done. It doesn't even matter. So like just because you accumulate that many sats, like your error was that you didn't have a loved one to pass it on to and you didn't teach them and they didn't understand how to do it. Like look yourselves in the face. Like your inheritance plan is equally as important as your sat stacking, if you actually are serious about giving it to someone else. If you're actually like serious about your children, not just
you.
You
care about generational wealth rather than just personal wealth.
Yeah. I mean, like, again, you could die tomorrow. I could walk out this building and get hit by a car. Right. Like, you know,
look both ways, freaks.
Sometimes I drive like an asshole. Like, you know, who knows? Like there's plenty of time. I can think through my 20s and I can think of so many times I got lucky that I wasn't dead.
Right.
Right. So that like that paradigm hasn't ended either. So, you know, there again, I'm not saying don't stack sats. I'm saying there's a lot of things to think about that are important for the goal, which is wealthy and hyper-Bitcoinization.
We have John here talking about children. Obviously, children are very set expensive, right? I would say that's a fulfilling endeavor.
You also need that for the future. Right. Like, you will decay and end, you know? Right. So again, like,
I agree with all this.
The only, you know, my whole thing is, like, if you apply the proper bullishness on your sats, you appreciate the sats you already have a lot more. And you might think about, like, the longevity of those sats. Because again, like, the hyper Bitcoinized world, any amount of Bitcoin that we have right now will be stupid then. I can't emphasize that enough.
But you're over indexing on that side of the equation. There's the overwhelming majority of people that own and use Bitcoin today are thinking on the opposite. They think on the opposite level. They think, you know, Bitcoin is up 10x in fiat terms. Like, I need to rebalance and reduce my Bitcoin position. They're not thinking, you know, like that. That's the overwhelming majority of people right now, right?
I mean, again, I'm talking to the hardcore Bitcoin.
And if you ask like anybody over the last, not 20 years, if you ask anybody over the last, you know, 14 years, if the reality is the majority of them went through like this rebalance phase where they were like, oh, Bitcoin commands too much. Because if you wait long enough, if we're right, and historically this has been the case, like Bitcoin, if you don't do anything, Bitcoin will just be your entire net worth.
Yeah, Bitcoin puts you on zero by itself. Like, you don't have to do anything to get on zero. Eventually, Bitcoin will just put you on zero.
It just eats your portfolio or whatever.
Yeah, well, it just appreciates exponentially faster than all that stuff. So, like, I guess what I'm trying to say is, like, the best thing that any person can do today is acquire amount of Bitcoin that they can get to hyper-Bitcoinization. Because on the path to hyper-Bitcoinization, it will put you on zero by itself. You don't have to do anything about it. The key is getting it over there. And like, look, my advice is not to get only 37 sats.
You should get a lot more than 37.
My advice is get as many as you can actually get across the finish line, because we can't fathom the future Bitcoin world in Bitcoin terms. Like, we have a very hard time doing it. But if we actually get to that world, again, three scenarios: Bitcoin eats everything, Bitcoin zero, Bitcoin's just another asset. Like, if Bitcoin eats everything, then we can't fathom what the world looks like in Bitcoin terms, but we should try to get there. We should try to get our Bitcoin there with whoever we care about to have it, whether it's us or them, whether it's me or my children. Like, that's where we are in history. So it's like, get as much as you can.
Yes.
Get as much of San Francisco as you can going out west, right? Buy it all up. Like, right.
Buy all the land in Wyoming.
But don't be, like, no one remembers the guy who bought all the land and then lost it.
Right.
No one remembers that guy. Like, you can't, like, and guess what? If you just bought one apartment in San Francisco and held it from those days versus someone who had it all and then had nothing when San Francisco actually rose to prominence, then, like, you're doing better. Like, the one apartment, actually, the one hit is better. The 37 sats, the 3,500, whatever you want to call it, from the bottom part of the S-curve is worth it on the top of the S-curve.
And if you own an apartment in San Francisco, you should sell it for Bitcoin right now.
Absolutely. I'm just, you brought up the going west example.
That
I'm
is trying investment
to,
advice.
I'm just trying to, you know, stick to that example of going west and leveraging, you know, the ability of the land grab. Like, hey, who remembers the people who owned New York and then don't own it anymore? Who didn't see, like,
the
its
Dutch.
Rise? Okay,
before
well,
the Dutch,
who remembers them? You know, who remembers those people? No one. Like, you need to. The point is, like, Bitcoin matters when we're in hyper Bitcoinization. Like, it won't fulfill its full potential for your optionality.
It matters today. I mean, two weeks ago, there was a bunch of rich people that were freaking out that their money wasn't in the banks. Never was.
Mm-hmm.
And I slept easy that night, right? Because I had permissionless censorship resistant money that wasn't controlled by a company or a government. That was today. I mean, that was 2 weeks ago, right? Like, that's the present.
Again, I agree. Like, you should educate yourself about this as quickly as possible, acquire as many sats, and continue to accumulate but with the focus of longevity, of getting it to hyper-Bitcoinization.
Yeah, no, this makes sense to me. This, you got to stay humble. It's a game of survival. It's always a game of survival.
So
always has been.
One thing that helps you survive is obviously being around other Bitcoiners and like the circular economy. And like Bitcoiners are already onto this stuff. Like I'm just trying to like ring the bell
community
about like how important all the other stuff is to the survivability of your sats. And I'm trying to tell people that your sats today are like, get more bullish about them and take more care about them and ensure their survivability even more than acquiring marginal sats. Like in a world, I'm trying to be as logical as possible. Like in a future Bitcoin world where Bitcoin is the denominator, like if you have any reasonable amount of sats today, you are stupid rich in that world. Far richer than you could have ever imagined. But the key is to have it there, is to have it then. And we're still early. Like we're still less than 1% global adoption. So everything that we've seen so far will most likely look nothing like what the future looks like.
Right. No, I agree.
We always agree, Matt. It's just about the orders of magnitude of bullishness.
Just an hour arguing over semantics.
You got to love it, man. That's why we're friends.
But I mean, so I just want to me, like one of the most important goals is strong local communities. Is if I look at, I mean, we'll go back to my doomer optimism. The show is called Citadel Dispatch. I believe in this idea of Citadel theory, this idea of hyperlocalism. I think these large centralized institutions have done us wrong. They're corruptible by nature. And as a result, we have to go back to the basics, go back to the basics of these very strong, smaller local communities that work together and stand up for each other. But then also there'll still be global trade. And because of Bitcoin, global trade has less friction, right? And because of other technologies, global trade will have less friction. I mean, I remember I had a conversation with Bitcoin sign guy back like almost 4 years ago now today, where we were talking about like onion routed drones and stuff, and you know, transferring goods and between different local communities paid for with Bitcoin. Lightning didn't really exist yet, but like now you could imagine it with Lightning involved as well. And obviously that's a major focus for both of us. In this idea of nurturing and making these communities more robust and making Bitcoin stronger together. I'm a strong believer that together Bitcoiners are way stronger than individually, right? It's like the twig analogy, right? Like one twig is easy to break, but if you put a bunch of twigs together, it's hard to break the twigs together.
Yeah, we need to keep building the Bitcoin coalition, right? And yeah. And like with the small towns or the small communities or the citadels, the way I agree with that vision, like I'm open-minded to seeing that change, but my mental model is everything from every institution, from like religion to knowledge to language to math to governments to military, all of that stuff, everything, table manners, morality, all of that is to achieve further scale for human beings. Like human beings are constantly coming up with new ways to further scale.
Right.
So Bitcoin is the next step to increase our scaling ability, and the way that we behave on Bitcoin will actually lead to a more scalable future. And I do think like this idea of like small, tight-knit local communities, citadels, if you will, competing jurisdictions, right, that increases scale, that increase optionality, that will exponentially increase value for the planet. So, you know, following the ways of Bitcoin is moving us towards that brighter, better, more bullish future per set.
Yep. No, I agree.
But I mean,
we're on the same page there.
Let's pivot to like the kind of community part. And yeah, again, like people are always like, why should I spend money to go to the Bitcoin conference or any other event, right?
Or like, anything.
Yeah. Like, why shouldn't I just like sit there and stack sats? Like, that's great. But like, there's an awesome opportunity to meet Bitcoiners, to spend more of your time in the space by becoming employed in the space or whatever at these in-person gatherings. And not to say that you should spend your sats on that, but like the benefits of building the other elements of what's going to get you across the finish line is it's really important. And it's something that, you know, Bitcoiners should value just as much as they kind of value, you know, stacking sats and whatever they do around Bitcoin.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely a value there, right? Like the people have to make a educated decision, right? Basically, on everything where their sats are worth being placed, right? And I think there's, so we have, you know, love it or hate it. So, you know, when you throw an event that is over 20,000 people, last year we had over 20,000 people in Miami. There's going to be things that people don't like, right? And there's going to be things that are very positive. And that's what you see on an event of that kind of scale. But there's nothing like it. There's like Miami, Bitcoin Conference Miami. There's nothing even comes close to comparing to the sheer scale of that kind of gathering of Bitcoiners. There's just so many people.
Yeah, I mean, I like to call it the physical manifestation of the Bitcoin ecosystem every single year, right? So it's not everything, it's not everyone, but once a year, like there's a shelling point where everyone kind of comes together. So
fucking overwhelming. in a positive and negative way. Not, you know.
And the thing is like that shelling point can change, right? That shelling point is like the Bitcoin ecosystem, but right now it is Miami, and being a part of that is like it's very intoxicating. And I know we were just talking about the FOMO of Nostra Rica, and I'm sure we would have liked to like pull some strings to been able to be there, but like the energy is intoxicating when you have like this kind of shelling point of an idea come together.
Nostra Rica is the closest thing to Bitcoin FOMO I've ever had. You know, a massive shout out to everyone who ran that event. I was watching virtually, but it's never the same actually being in person. And
definitely not. You know,
I had good personal
reasons. Can't hug people virtually, right?
Yeah, I had good personal reasons for not making it out there, but that seems like a great event. So, I mean, CK, like you've rose to leadership within Bitcoin Magazine. How do you look at running an event of that size, of that scale? Like, how do you think about it? I mean, obviously, like you must see. You see all the different pieces, right? You see how the sausage is made. Like, how do you think about it?
I mean, it's just a 10,000 input project. Like, I really do think of it as like this, like just massive project with, you know, thousands and thousands of stakeholders, whether it's the people who view it virtually, attend, make it possible by sponsoring or working or whatever. You know, it's just all these inputs and you have to stay organized. And really we're doing our best to like create a stage and create a platform and create a place that is good enough to attract and to like bring together the most amount of stakeholders in the Bitcoin ecosystem. So it's like that challenge of like, how do you plan something that's worthy and how do you like put together something that will delight like as many stakeholders as possible and help Bitcoin move forward and open the door to Bitcoin culture and what Bitcoin is to as many people as possible and do that well, right? Like,
right.
You know, be able
easier
to like, get people
done.
In the door, like without waiting in lines, like make sure everyone has like a comfortable place to be. Make sure like, you know, you are having the business conversations that you want to have. Make sure that you are able to display to the public what you've been, your project or your company's been working on, you know, for an entire year, you know, like just putting all those pieces together, prioritizing, making everyone happy, making the city of Miami Beach happy. You know, they want to get rid of spring break. So they want us to like help crowd out, you know, the riffraff and like just all this like crazy stuff, you know, like it's a massive, massive endeavor for less than 100 people to put on and to
tiny team
and to make people. And again, like make a massive group of people with very different interests happy.
People don't realize how small the team is.
And making it financially possible, too.
It's, yeah, not, you know, lose crazy. All your sats in the process.
you know, David Bailey prioritizes the Bitcoin community over Sat Count on many levels. You know, like, I definitely would not be as gung ho about making awesome experiences happen as David Bailey is. You know, he's just always trying to do bigger, better, more. It's crazy.
Well, I remember, like, so Bitcoin 2019 was awesome. It's like 2,500 people. And then Bitcoin 2020 was supposed to be in LA. And it was early April or late March was when that was supposed to happen. So it was literally like 3 weeks after the lockdowns hit the whole country. So that got scrapped. The company went into like pure survival mode. Then Bitcoin 2021 was like the great comeback story. There was like 13,000 people there. That team was, I mean, I started working with you in that.
That's when you started helping, was around.
Was before that.
Like,
was,
yeah, leading up to that.
Was fall 2020, yeah. Right? In the lead up to that. That team was, what, like 25 people or something like that, put on a 13,000 person event.
Dylan LeClaire was selling t-shirts.
Yeah, I mean, Dylan was like 12 years old. That was pure chaos. That it was structured chaos in the lead up to that event. I don't think people really realize like what I probably aged that those 2 months in the lead up of that, like, might have aged, you know, 5 years, 10 years, just on that process. And then, so then 2021 was insane. And then 2022 was like, how many people came in 2022?
25,000.
And the team maybe doubled in size. Maybe it was like 60 people, 70 people, right?
Yeah, doubled in. We doubled in what we thought was our sophistication, but the complexity increased by more than that too. So
yeah,
it's crazy. Like,
now we're about to hit 2023 in 55 days.
55 days, man.
And then in between there was Bitcoin Amsterdam.
Yep.
Which was awesome because we got to meet all the, there's a huge Dutch community.
Amsterdam is such an awesome city too. It's a really cool city to just hang out in. I'm working hard to make Bitcoin Amsterdam a reality again, by the way.
Is that going to happen again?
I'm working hard.
He's working on no commitment.
I'm applying tremendous amounts of pressure to our Dutch counterparts.
Yeah. No, it's good. And then the print magazine came back in the meantime. It's amazing how quick time flies.
The new one's going to be fire too. Bitcoiners should get hyped about that. That's a collectible worth stacking.
So I'd be remiss if I didn't mention, we are doing the same open source ticket program that we did last year, but expanded even more projects. So I think right now we're at 46 open source projects. Contributors to those projects with a commit before March 1st get a free ticket to Bitcoin 2023. We're going to try and hit 60 projects. I keep adding projects as we find them.
Yeah, I mean, I keep pushing Matt. I want to give 200 open source contributors tickets to the event. Yeah. That's more than double what we did last year.
Right, we did a little over 100 last year.
Yeah, so I'm pushing Matt hard to be like, find more projects with people who want to come. So
I'm happy to give away tickets to the open source contributors that do so much in this space. I mean,
so it's the least that we can do. And again, the open source contributors coming to the event bring so much wealth and relevance.
So you know that guy Finch who was giving you shit?
Yeah.
In the comments earlier?
Sure.
And also is going to lose the mempool bet?
Yeah.
He became an open source contributor between last year and this year under the hope that we were going to do the program again. And now he's coming to Miami with a free ticket. And that's exactly what we want to see. We want to see, first of all, freaks, the reason there's a date that is after our announcement is because we don't want people going and spamming these projects with bullshit contributions. But also we want to see more people go into the open source world, more people feel compelled to kind of contribute to this movement. And I think Finch is a perfect example of that.
Totally. And thank you, Finch, for what you've done for Bitcoin, and excited to shake your hand in Miami. Glad that we could save you some sats on your ticket.
He's been an internet friend for like 2.5 years. I don't think I've shook his hand yet unless he didn't tell me and just came up to me and shook my hand.
Well, you know, the first time we met, I like introduced myself without like doxing my internet identity.
Oh, yeah. So fuck pissed. CK, man. He was like, hi, I'm Christian. And then like we had a whole lunch or whatever, and I already knew him as CK Snarks. And I figured out maybe like a week later or half a week later that... put two and two together.
You know, I was just trying not to fanboy too hard, Matt.
I will say that if you do come,
a good dinner though, or a good lunch.
If you come up to me in Miami, and we know each other through the internet, just introduce yourself as your name. Like, don't introduce yourself as Paul or whatever, and have us have like a 10-minute conversation, and then tell me your name. Like, just, you know, that's your name. That's how I know you. So, just consider it. But if you do have, I mean, we have a lot of open source contributors that listen to Dispatch. I probably don't say it enough. But there is this program. So if you want to come to Miami, you're an open source contributor, your project is probably listed already. Go to b.tc/conference/open-source, and you can apply there, and we'll get you a free ticket.
Let's go. 200 ticket grants, and it's a 3-day ticket. So every single day you get it.
I think we can blast by 200 holdbacks this time.
You know, I will up our inventory, the quota, the limit. Let's smash 200. Let's go, guys. But I would like to show all Bitcoin events, like get together with Bitcoiners and build that community.
Come to Bitcoin Park. Come visit us here.
The one of the best things about Nashville, I mean, like Rod and Matt, they did a lot to kind of like bring a lot of momentum here with the Nashville Bitcoin meetup, but you know, obviously creating the premier in-person space for Bitcoin here. And I get to enjoy it. You know, I'm a member. I get to enjoy it when I'm not at the Bitcoin Magazine office, but it's incredible. And again, like these spaces, these kind of like small coalitions of Bitcoiners, it helps move Bitcoin forward. You know, I'm really hopeful that we can do in Tennessee what the Texas guys have done in
Working
Texas.
On it.
And, you know, how impactful is that for Bitcoin, right? You know, not to say that the politicians are going to be able to enable Bitcoin. I don't think they will, but we can help them see the light so they don't expose their constituents to pain. And speaking of another event, you know, the Bitcoin policy, the BTC policy crew, based out of the park, they're putting together
Bitcoin Policy Institute.
Exactly. Bitcoin Policy Institute.
Work on your show.
I'm sorry, man. Thank you, Matt. Always pushing me, man. But so the Bitcoin Policy Institute, BTC at BTC Policy on Twitter, they're putting on an event, and they're exclusively trying to educate lawmakers and help them not make mistakes as it, you know, regards Bitcoin, and help them make, you know, their constituents' lives as easy as possible. And I think that that's definitely a gathering worth looking into as well, just because they're going to give, you know, the people from the community that should be talking to these regulators a platform. And when you see what's coming out of the office of the presidency,
it's bad shit. Yeah.
You know, I don't expect much out of them, but like, you know, hurting Americans by being undereducated about Bitcoin and being so far away from bullish enough on the value of sats post hyperbitcoinization, you know, that's all bad. So gathering and trying to fix that and try to mitigate as much damage as possible on that front, it's huge.
Yeah, I mean, the freaks know that I think the corrupt politicians can go fuck themselves, and I don't really think they can be reasoned with. But at the same time, I mean, while we start to see all this chaos kind of unwind, I don't want my own government actively going after me. And some policy advocacy is very important in your local jurisdictions and even with your federal government. And there is no other organization besides the Bitcoin Policy Institute that I choose to support. We give them free office space here at the park so they can operate out of here. They're great guys like Grant, David, and all their fellows over there at the Bitcoin Policy Institute. They really do care, and they care about the right things. They're not like trying to protect the ability to dump securities on retail or, you know, launch your own shitcoin or launch your own exchange. Like, they're going to try and protect self-custody, running your own node, using Bitcoin privately, the things that actually do matter. And they're making real progress on very little money, a shoestring budget. So to the freaks, I would say probably you're probably better off just stacking sats for yourself. But if you're involved in a Bitcoin company in America, you are uniquely vulnerable to American regulation. And a part of your budget should be focused on supporting the Bitcoin Policy Institute and sending employees to their events and helping them in any way you can, because it is a existential threat to your business, straight up. Like, you will make less money if there was bad policy in America. And I hope to see many other policy institutes similar to this in other countries around the world, because ultimately Bitcoin is a global phenomenon.
I 100% agree. Couldn't have said it better myself, so I won't. But Bitcoin Policy Institute is putting on an amazing event. Check that out.
So when is that? Do we know when that is?
It's end of April, so it's coming up before Miami, and they'll be at Miami too. So check that out. Obviously, the Bitcoin conference. If you can't be there in person, StackSats, and watch the live stream. That's free always. But you know, talking about some things that you can calibrate to that might help you get your sats across the finish line that may be worth a little bit of opportunity cost on sats. Matt, I think you might agree with this. Stacking less sats, but doing it KYC free might help you get those sats across the finish line.
And learn how to use it privately.
I mean, personally for me, this is just me. All my KYC sats, I discount them to zero in my head. I have them. If I get them across, fucking gravy. But the only real sats I have are the sats that I acquired the right way.
All I have is 37 sats because that's generational wealth. So if anyone asks, that's all I have.
There we go. 37 sats. That's what I'm betting the house on, baby. 37 sats.
CK, this has been an absolute pleasure. Thank you for joining me in the studio. Before we wrap up, you have any final thoughts?
No. Hey, stay humble. That's the really important part of the advice. Stack sats, get them across the finish line. And I'm here for the same goal. I'm here to help you get as many sats across the finish line. I'm trying my best to get as many sats across the finish line. So stay bullish.
I love it. Appreciate you coming on. Appreciate you. You're a good friend. I'm looking forward to Bitcoin Miami. Love you, freaks. Thanks for joining us in the live chat. I'll see you next week. I got some conversations in the works. It'll be a good week next week. So just stay tuned across all the channels. As always, you can find all the links at SealDispatch.com. Thank you for supporting the show. Thanks for coming to the live chat. I love you all. Stay humble, stack sats. Peace.